Hi, this is a tired redhead fangirl after a day in New York. Happy Saturday 13th. Did get to visit Jim Hanley's comics on 33rd for a short amount of time, but I was with two non-comic readers, so I didn't want to take up the whole night. But I did want to say that I'm going to talk about a couple things in this podcast. My blog is at redlibcomic, redlibcomic .blogspot.com, and I also host the Comic Blog Legion with almost 100 comic blogs out there, including my own, at Mid-Jersey Comic Con / Blog Legion. Today I'm going to talk about Ex Machina, the third trade paperback, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, number 8, with the new Iron Spider costume in these last couple issues, and a tie-in to Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, which Joe Quesada does not love their marriage. Anyway, that, also All-Star Superman 3, which I think came out a while ago, but I just got to, and I'll touch on Civil War Identity Crisis 52 that I talked about on my blog already. All right, let's start with Ex Machina.
Fact versus Fiction by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Tony Harris. And this is volume 3, which collects issues 11 through 16. I was thinking about how Brian K. Vaughan writes comics for the non-comic reader, but also really for the comic reader. And I guess it's just the strength of the writing that he can write Why the Last Man or Ex Machina or Runaways in that fun, pop culture-y sort of yabbering guy, Buffy, Xander sort of style. And people just eat it up. I know I do. I've been reading Why the Last Man. I think we're up to issue 45 now, and I'm just dreading the end of it because I just love Yorick and 355 and Dr. Man and all the characters in Why, and mostly sort of the Peter Parker quippiness of Yorick. But Ex Machina has a similar sort of character in Mitchell 100, but a more grounded and older and someone who's experienced the tragedy of 9/11 and how he's trying to make his world a better place by being mayor of New York City and dealing with his special powers, the ability to talk to machines. I'm especially happy that I saw a panel where Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris talked at the Big Apple Con last year, and I know how to pronounce Ex Machina because it was Ex Machina before that to me. So in Fact versus Fiction, there's a couple major things going on in this arc. Number one, there's a robot on the scene, and we all know comic fans love a good robot as much as horror fans love a good zombie, I guess. And there's actually a great part that Mitchell 100 is indeed a comic geek and nerd like the rest of us, and there's cool scenes of flashbacks from when he's younger and he reads comics and modern scenes where 100 has to get his comics on the down low because, you know, you can't be the mayor and be seen in Midtown or Jim Hanley's, I guess, which I give a lot of props to a mayor I saw doing that. But anyway, the robot is trying to also be a vigilante sort and stopping crime, and there's this "I was made by the engineer, I was made by the great machine" mystery of how is Mitchell tied to this robot. And I don't want to make any big spoiler, but you know, there is indeed a connection. Kremlin and Bradbury, Mitchell's friends, are trying to find out about this robot, and the female head of the police is trying to spy on them and stop them because she feels like they're self-righteous mercenaries, which in some ways they are. And in the middle of this, Mitchell decides that the best thing he can do, because he really believes in civil service, and being a librarian and a civil servant myself, I love his sort of commitment to community service and civil service and the importance of, if not with your job, giving back, at least giving with your time or money. So anyway, he decides, oh, I'm the mayor, and what I can do is I got called for jury duty, and I'm going to sit on this jury just like anyone else. Well, there's a lot of talk about, like, is this just a, you know, PR stunt? And, you know, how I believe Giuliani sat on a jury, and it was like, it really didn't turn out to be anything positive. It was sort of embarrassing. But he goes into this jury, and one of the jurors is completely a wingnut and ends up holding the jury room hostage, and I won't talk about much about that. But of course, Mitchell and his powers come into play and what he can do. And there's a side little part about adventure number 365 and how Mitchell's been looking for that forever, and his comic book store that he used to go to. And so there's sort of a tie-in with the robot and robot guy, and they say, well, you know, they piece things together by anyone who would pretend to be an android is the kind of man who would trade one fantasy for another. And the comic fantasy into the robot fantasy is important there. And then in the end, I think this was very important that Mitchell finds his mom, and his mom is sort of, well, she's an alcoholic and sort of hasn't really, you know, she's sort of wandered in life, and, you know, there is a tie into that Mitchell's father had died in the underground tunnels, and more of his background is revealed. And in the end, one of the quotes is that, you know, 30 chapters of good deeds never really tells you a man's whole story. And BKV leaves it there. So, Ex Machina, and now I've been reading, there's a special Ex Machina special in June 2006, one of two, and I think everyone should be reading this comic. Tony Harris's art, you know, bridges and robots and the great machine, and plus expressions and people and faces, I mean, it's just a really great marriage of Harris and Vaughn here, and it really is one of the best things going on in fiction at all, whether graphic novels or novels. And that's high praise from a librarian like myself.
All right. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man 8, written by Peter David, Mike Waringo, penciler. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man 8 is a alternate reality sort of comic where Aunt May actually dies and Uncle Ben lives. And over her grave, Peter has started to realize his powers, and he realizes as a pro wrestler or TV star, he can make a lot of money and take care of Uncle Ben and him. And So Uncle Ben becomes his manager and he gets a percentage of the money, but Peter goes further and further off course. In fact, just even in the beginning, Uncle Ben comments that when he puts the costume on, he's a completely different person. And he's like, yeah, you know, I get in this costume and boom, I'm this snarky wise guy, and how anonymity is very liberating. But there's a side, which is, you know, pointed to us comic bloggers, that there should be rooms where people could chat using fake identities. They'd spend hours just being jerks to each other. So that's kind of funny. You know, Peter goes on and on and ends up going with the CAA as an agent and leaves Uncle Ben behind, and he just sort of gets like the assistant birthday card to him, and you know, it's a what the difference between Aunt May being with him and Uncle Ben, and how May was, you know, a great person and more loving and patient, and perhaps Peter felt more protective than he would if it were just his uncle who had died. And so the story goes on, and in the end, you know, May just, Uncle Ben just wants to see Peter. And at the end of the issue, the Hobgoblin from the year 2211 has faced many, many successors of Spider-Man, and this new Iron Spider-Man apparently has the best reflexes of all, so I guess he can thank Tony Stark for this new outfit, which is actually referenced in Dan Slott's The Thing in a really funny way, of course, because it's Dan Slott, and The Thing sort of asks Peter, like, that costume, like, what's with the three arms? You're a spider. Shouldn't you have eight? And he's like, I don't know. You know, Tony Stark just said, like, it would make me look cool. And things like, it makes you look like you can't count. And he's like, come on, can you stop talking about the suit? And Ben Grimm just gives him $20 to, like, make the suit go away and back to the classic. So that's really great. Just total dead on funny, like relevant Dan Slott stuff. And as far as Spider-Man Loving Mary Jane issue 5, Sean McKeever's continuing the teen drama saga of our Mary Jane, and in this issue she finally gets to go on her dream fantasy amazing once in a lifetime chance at a date with Spidey. So he makes this web picnic, which is really amazing. And he's, of course, Peter underneath, but he's really not sure what to do. But he kind of swings her around and, of course, breaks up some burglaries and stuff. And that's really cute and great illustrations in this of them around New York and the Chrysler Building. And but then they go on, like, a carriage ride, and he even asks her, like, is there someone else? And she's like, no, you know, and she just wants to go home. And then, of course, she immediately calls her girlfriend, Liz, and is like, you know, I can't believe it. Like, I went out with him, but it was really boring, and because he can't talk about personal things, and it's just, like, small talk and villains, and there's nothing real, and she couldn't tell his emotions, and, you know, what difference is there between him and many guys, but okay, this is in the realm of Spider-Man. And so Liz finally is like, you know, it's Peter. He's completely the biggest geek and nerd ever, but if you really care about him, go for it. So she calls him all weekend, and she looks for him in school, and she's like, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And she even runs into Harry Osborn and is like, come on, where is he? And he's like, oh, he's doing that school liaison thing, and he's talking with this real knockout, and she's a blonde, and they're going to the school library. And so she runs, and as we can see the buildup, there he is, someone's laughing at him and getting his joke, and Peter introduces Mary Jane Watson, his study partner, to Gwen Stacy. So the blonde rival has appeared on the scene for our redhead Mary Jane. And blonde versus redhead will begin in the future issues, and we'll see what happens. All-Star Soups, number 3, Grant Morrison writing, and Frank Quitely, whose name is not Frank Quitely, real name. If you've read my blog, it's something completely different, but it's this sort of joke on the quite frankly. So he does not fit into all guys named Frank are perverted. Not like just in a normal perversion way, like really bent and twisted. Anyway, All-Star Superman. I really like Morrison's writing, like many, many of those in the blogosphere that I read. And I love Quitely's illustrations, you know, We Three and this are just so great. And they're not so ridiculously provocative or violent, or it's just a great, like, smart and decent comic, which I guess that's what our Superman should be all about. But then look at Identity Crisis and Infinite Crisis, and Superman's in a whole nother realm going on over there. But in this one, he gives Lois his superpowers in liquid form. So she's like jazzed, like, I get to be like you for a whole day. And of course, you know, a bunch of other things interfere, including Samson and Atlas, who decide to have a pissing contest to sort of prove how great they are to Lois. And, you know, they're, you know, complimenting her dripping allure in her clinging garment, but it's not that lingerie, cheesy, all-star Batman's sort of Frank Miller way, or even the Hulk girl Chaikin that I just saw today that I'm really going to give up on, but she's wearing her cute little super outfit, and they say that single girls with brains, beauty, and super strength are rare in any world, I guess, so they're sort of fighting over her, and that's kind of funny. And in the end, Superman has to answer the unanswerable question, which apparently is something along the lines of what happens when an unstoppable object meets an unmovable object. And his answer is something along the lines of surrender. They surrender, and that's accepted. And so Lois ends this sort of issue like, of course we know what I see in you, but what do you see in me? Like, why me? And it's just that great sort of romantic, like, where someone else sees something more in you than you ever saw in yourself. And I can't say that I'm a huge Superman Lois love story. It doesn't hit me in the way that Spidey and Mary Jane does. And it's not just because she's not a redhead, but I think this is just a really well-done series and deserves everyone's money, which certainly not everything out there does. And just to end this, I just picked up 52 today. 52, one issue a week, a year without Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman, and who fills in the gap, and a very, very ambitious weekly comic. So we'll see. I saw one blog that said they were underwhelmed. Somebody I read a lot, and I don't know how I'll feel. Civil War, I think the funniest thing is that I have seen the words Mark Millar and ham-fisted more than anything. Like, how many times the word ham-fisted has come up when talking about his writing, but this one is less ham-fisted than normal. So that's funny. I think it was good, but I think it's a little too based in reality and not enough escapism with superhero registrations and politics, and I'm just not sure that I don't know. We'll see. The dividing lines and the plans that'll split them down the middle, and what about Tony Stark and Reed Richards and Daredevil and Luke Cage and Captain America and where they're going to fall? It could be interesting. And sort of the witch hunt story of changing lives is kind of how all of our lives have changed in the 2000s, I guess. So that's the end of this podcast, and we'll do it again sometime soon. Bye.